This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 144, where we're going to do a bit of a cloud news roundup, recorded live August 16th, 2016.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, the competitive landscape, and related technologies. Just the information. No marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Chris at LoungeflyZ.
Or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl. Morning, AC.
Morning, CJ. Welcome back to the upright, the land of the uprights.
It's arguable about which way is actually correct, but it's nice. I'm still lagging a little bit. For those who are wondering, what the hell are these guys talking about? I spent last week in New Zealand. I was down there for the Digital Workplace Conference in Auckland, New Zealand. Did a couple of sessions there and got some time to catch up with family. So obviously, Southern Hemisphere feels like upside down from up here, and up here feels like upside down from down there. So I'm not sure what's right. I'm just completely confused. But how have you been anyway?
Doing good, man. Just plugging away, getting work done.
Nice.
A whole lot. So just, yeah, it's been excited to see. And we just released one of our shows that we did recently, the one we did with Women in Technology with Kathy Du. We just went live with it today as we're recording this. And been really cool to see the feedback we've gotten so far. And I got another cool one coming out next week where we're going to talk to Alex Pierce about education, Office 365 and Microsoft's role in the education space and what offerings are there for them. So as we know, we kind of record things ahead of time and stuff. But yeah, man, it was good. And I hope that everybody enjoys those two episodes. But today, hey, man, we got to catch up on some news, and we haven't done in a while.
Yeah, there's been a bit of stuff going on. But also one thing I should point out is that if you listen to one of our shows, like these interviews that AC's done in the last couple of episodes, and then you hear this and you hear us talking about those shows, it's not too late to send us questions or feedback about those shows, even shows in the past, even a couple of weeks back. So definitely get in touch with us, and we'll wrangle in Kathy or any of the guests that we have to answer any questions you might have, and or do a little follow-up show about a particular topic. So definitely get in touch with us if you've listened to those, and have some feedback for us.
Absolutely.
But today's show, we thought we'd catch up on a little bit of cloud news. There's been a bit going on. Both you and I have been kind of crazy the last couple of weeks, so there's been a few things we'll touch on, but it's good to do a bit of a news roundup every once in a while. We've done some interviews, and now some time for some news. So we've got some Office 365 stuff, we've got some Azure stuff, and we've got some news about Gartner and things. And we may even have a couple of picks at the end of the show, so stay tuned for those. But would you like to kick us off with some news, AC? Anything in particular that perked your ears up over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. I have two updates around Office 365 that are pretty appropriate. Unfortunately, there was some stuff that the timing of them could have been a little bit better, at least selfishly for us, because we talked to Alex Pierce in the previous episode about the Microsoft and the education space. But the Office blog site had published two bits of news that we had. One is a post that came out in August. In early August, it says automate the OneNote staff notebook creation and more with the new API. And so what they have is that now we have the ability through the OneNote API and Office 365, the ability to create notebooks, not just in OneDrive for Business, but also SharePoint sites and unified groups. But this update is going to give us the ability to do things like creating staff notebooks, updating staff notebooks, deleting, adding members and leaders, removing students and leaders, inserting sections, a bunch of this kind of stuff that's just going to make it easier to go through and to do a lot more automation and create working with OneNote. So I have that link in the show notes. And another one that we had was a little bit of a back-to-school update. So it's a back-to-school update for OneNote class notebook app and a special add-in. So some of the things that they did, they rolled out a bunch of new features across 44 different languages and 63 different markets. Some of the changes that they added here was the ability to have a new like manage notebooks button where a teacher can see all of his or her class notebooks on one page with a bunch of new capabilities like renaming student sections, adding sections, enabling teacher-only sections, locking the collaboration space. This is really cool. I mean, as we talked about with Alex earlier, I had no idea what Microsoft had done around the classroom. And with kids going back to school right now, I know my kids are. My son just moved in first week of elementary school, middle school was last week. And from the way that, you know, they now are going between different classes for specific subjects and having lockers and how to have everything connected and digitized, Microsoft's giving a ridiculous amount of resources away to students and to schools and to educators for free. I mean, you just validate the domain, which is pretty simple. It's got a .edu on the end. And you get a ton of ridiculous resources. So a bunch of updates that came out too, which is pretty appropriate for right when school gets back to coming back in session here.
Yeah, definitely. It seems OneNote is surprisingly huge in, well, not surprisingly, I guess it's a quiet sleeper of an application that's making some really great progress and definitely doing that in education. Also the legal world, apparently. Legal students are picking it up, making it really popular as well.
Good way to kind of get people involved in it, at least, I mean, from a business standpoint, it's smart for Microsoft to do this, to get people using these tools so that they, I don't want to say they become dependent upon them, but then when they go out and they leave the education space and they go out into the real world and get jobs and stuff, that this is it's a resource that they're familiar with, they start working with right away.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a very cool tool and more people should give it a shot. Hey, I've got another piece of news. We heard yesterday that Microsoft Ignite conference in late September sold out.
Wow.
18,000 people.
Wow.
So that's coming up on, I think, September 26th. Is that the right date? I should know this. We're a silver sponsor and going to it, so I should probably figure that out. But yeah, it's in Atlanta this year, or Hotlanta, as some people like to call it.
Oh, yeah.
It's, September 26th, I believe, something like that.
Yeah, 26th through the 29th.
Yeah, 26th to 29th. And it really covers a pretty broad range of audiences, but it's more heavily weighted on the IT side of things than anything else. I think that's by far and away their largest audience, whereas Build is kind of the dev-specific show. Although there is developer content at MS Ignite, quite a lot of it, it's definitely weighted towards the sort of the IT pro side of the house. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see this year. Last year was the first time it ran. This will be the second one. And obviously, the first time around, it was a bit, everybody was a bit sort of standoffish about like, well, how is this going to be? And is this going to be any good? And they did a reasonable job of filling the show with people and things, and the show went pretty well. But I think this time, you know, we're a couple of, what are we now? I guess we're a month and a bit, and sold out. The hotels were gone weeks ago, but now they've decided to cut it off at 18,000 people.
Yeah, and you guys are going to be there, right?
We have a booth, and we're silver sponsors, and I'll be doing a community theater session as well in the expo hall. And yeah, we'll be there with bells on.
I decided that I was going to go. I was on the fence for a little while, and I decided I'm going to go. I went ahead and just got expo passes for, I think, Tuesday and Wednesday of that week. And but all the content's going to be online. This is a funny show because I know that there's a lot of our peers and probably a lot of the listeners of the show too that have wondered, you know, is there value in it for me to go or not? And I think, you know, with every conference, you have to always look at and say, what's the value in the show? And is there enough value for me in the show? And I know, like, this time, the reason I'm going is mostly for the podcast, for the show, to try and talk to, maybe grab a bunch of interviews. If you're at the show, I mean, reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you at the show and maybe, you know, find out what you're working on and talk to you for a few minutes. I'll have the microphone walking around and try and just do a little bit of a work around the podcast and drive a little bit of awareness and everything for it. But it'll be nice to catch up with people and to see what vendors are there and see what we see in the Azure and in the Office 365 expos, or what do you call those? Like the sections on the expo floor for those different product teams.
Yeah, I don't know. Microsoft Showcase area or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love walking the floor and seeing who's new, especially who's new. Like the old guard will always be there, but it's interesting to watch new folks pop up and see what they're up to. Obviously, we'll be there this year, and so we'll be a newbie to the show as well.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so that's sold out at 18,000 people. So it's going to be big.
And it's going to definitely be big. Definitely going to be big. It's,
yeah.
The hotel issues for Ignite's always going to be fun. I mean, it's a ton of people. I know it booked up pretty quick. I messed myself over by waiting a little bit late. So now I'm staying in a hotel kind of far away, only for two of the three nights that I'm there, and have to figure out if it's going to be sleeping in the car, sleeping on the street, or maybe trying to bunk with someone, or probably just stay out down by the airport and drive up. I'm going to end up driving in. I'm about 5-6 hours away, and it takes about, even if it's a 45-minute flight, it's still going to take me close to 5 hours between going from home to airport, waiting, airport to hotel, jazz and stuff. And
yeah.
Whatever.
It happens.
Yeah. So, but at any rate, it'd be fun. So another bit of news that we had here from the office guys is they had announced a general availability in early August of the Microsoft Excel API to expand the power of Office 365. So some of the new things that they gave us are Excel is a calculation service. So developers can now access the powerful calculation engine with instant results. Like you could, guess what? You could have, for example, a mortgage calculator that can take advantage of the PMT function in Excel. So using a REST
API. Nobody uses Excel for mortgages. What are you talking about?
It's used for every single demo in Excel.
Yeah, it's so true.
You can use Excel as a reporting service, Excel as a data service, and hook it up to things like Zapier or to Sage, which is an accounting software for 365. So it's pretty cool. So if they've gone through an update, I know that's a pretty popular API for Office 365. And so now it's gone to GA now for the latest release.
Very cool. Very cool. The scenarios with that are pretty interesting, like not having to download an Excel book, update it using the OpenXML SDK and then upload it or anything like that. Now you can just sort of insert rows and manipulate data. I actually did a quick demo of the API at the Digital Workplace Conference through Graph Explorer and digging into a Excel book and showing worksheets and stuff like that out of it, or digging into them, I should say, through the API, pulling out data and taking a look at them. And that's document manipulation through a REST API is kind of interesting. So it'll be it's a nice addition, and I think we'll see them round that out with Word and PowerPoint and things like that eventually as well, hopefully.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, kind of going off on what you just said, I think that even I've seen people use this Excel API almost for like a free database. When you need a relatively small app and you need to have data stored in a tabular kind of format with an easy way to edit it and view the data, this is not really that bad of an idea to use Excel as your database. I think Richard DeZerga with DX and Microsoft, and also runs the Office 365 developer podcast, I think I've seen him talk a little bit about that, where he's done that, use that as his own little back-end database, which is not, it really is a, it's a pretty good solution to be able to take advantage of it like that.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's been a long time coming, and it'll help with things like Zapier and IFT and stuff like that too. Being able to save, you know, tweets or what have you and drop them in an Excel doc, or use Excel as a destination for data like that. Kind of like what we do with podcast Twitter account, is we save up links and it goes into a Google Doc in this case, and then we end up tweeting that out, but it's all automated through Zapier. We could do the same thing with Excel now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I've got another one. Speaking of APIs, over in Azure land, Azure Storage has a new Node.js library that's gone into general availability. So it's called the Azure Storage Node Client Library, and it's up on NPM and in GitHub. You can go take a look at it, basically for interacting with Azure Storage, making it easier from Node, and rather than having to write raw REST requests. And it kind of wraps the REST API version and just makes it a bunch easier. So you could do things like getting metrics, doing work with blobs, things like that, get message and peak message APIs for queues, that sort of thing. And they've got some nice getting started docs for it, and makes it a ton easier to kind of integrate with your Node app.
Yeah, it's a pretty good library. It's funny because I didn't even realize that they had gone GA with this. I knew that this was out there, but didn't know they had gone GA with it, because I'm actually using it on a project. So I saw the news here. I'm like, well, this is kind of interesting. And I've even had to submitted a contribution to it. So I've even got a commit, and this is an open source commit there. I added a reference to, was it in the package.json? I added a reference to their typings file so that you don't have to do an extra download of the their typings file if you're using Node and using TypeScript to go through and to build your application. So
Cool.
Yes, it was pretty cool. It was nice to see it. I was like, oh, yeah, it's gone live. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. And I helped them. tiny help.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Excellent. So, yeah, that's some help for Node developers with Azure Storage.
Yeah. And then I know that we, for developers as well, on the Azure side as well, the Azure blog has a post that came out in early August that talks about ramping up your developer skills for Azure at Ignite. So kind of going back to our Ignite discussion we had, Azure's got over 30 sessions devoted to Azure development. So it's a great place to go through and to get ramped up on a bunch of stuff. This is the one thing I'm a little bit bummed about, that I'm not going to be able to see these sessions live, but they do have one of the sessions that does look pretty darn interesting is accelerating app delivery with Docker containers and Windows Server 2016.
Yay, Windows containers.
Yeah, so this is, I think the session code for that is 2960. But there's a couple posts that they have listed. They have a couple links that they have there for a couple different sessions there about managing Azure Service Fabric applications, soaring above and below the clouds with Azure Stack App Service for devs, securing mobile apps, et cetera. So even an Azure Function one as well. So it's definitely going to be a great place to go through and get some great info on Azure and keep track of that at the Ignite conference.
Very nice. Very nice. Azure has added some more preview stuff, which is kind of cool. In this case, they've got a new N-series virtual machine class that they've added, which is promises to give you the fastest GPU capacity available on a public cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for big number crunching. The idea behind this is this, you know, it's specific virtual machines that are tailored to number crunching. And obviously they do that through dedicated GPUs. And they've got a couple of different types. They've got the NC6, the NC12, and the NC24. So that gives you 6 cores, 12 cores, 24 cores. But also, depending on which one of those you choose, you get different GPU performance. So the NC6 gives you half a physical card, so 1K80 GPU. They're based on these things called, I've never heard of these before, but Tesla K80 GPUs.
Yeah,
it's a type of GPU chip that you can drop in a box. The NC12 has 2 of them, 1 physical card, or the NC24 has 4 of those cores, which gives you 2 physical cards. And so they've obviously sort of step up in different performance levels and things. Now, the interesting thing here is they also talk about being able to expose new sort of, I think they're APIs, they call them discrete device assignments, DDA, which gives you basically much closer to bare metal access to those GPUs, so you can do as close to raw performance on number crunching as they're willing to let you get, and really take advantage of the GPU performance profile, I guess, for want of a better word. So for doing things like CUDA type work, or they also mention OpenCL here, I'm not familiar with that, but some of our listeners may be, for doing things like ray tracing and deep number crunching, deep learning, all of these kinds of big number modeling exercises. So that's kind of cool. So yeah, this may be the new Cloud Wars, right? The race to the highest performance GPU available on a public cloud, and Azure are currently claiming victory on that.
This is these N-series, I guess you could think of them as NVIDIA-based machines, right? Because Tesla chip is a Tesla and CUDA. CUDA is it's like the SDK from NVIDIA, and the Tesla chip is an NVIDIA chip as well. But AWS has a couple VM types that are specific to GPUs. You know, love the background noise. I've got a military helicopter flying over my house right now, so sorry about that.
Delightful.
Lovely living in a military town sometimes. Sound of freedom. Azure's got an offering now as well, compared to what AWS has. And I've been looking to try and find some pricing information on what these things look like. And I haven't been able to find it yet, because I know they're just in preview and they're only going to be available in specific regions. So at the time we're recording this, I don't see the actual pricing information for it. But it's interesting. I talked to a guy that does a lot of computer imaging, like machine learning around computer imaging, and he does much more complicated stuff than this, but like something that can look at a picture and say, yeah, that's a cat in the picture or something like that, and not like a lynx or a mountain lion or something, just like a regular house cat. And he was telling me how using the GPU is so much more efficient and so much more powerful than using like a standard CPU. And it's some pretty high-end, very specialized stuff. And so it's also pretty expensive. I mean, I know he went through and just bought a machine recently to do a lot of his work. He was looking to go virtualize all of his work and kind of found that the amount of time that he was going to be using it was just better to buy his own. But to buy a machine that had four of these video cards in it, it's a special machine from NVIDIA. And I mean, the dude dropped something like $16,000 just on this one machine.
Wow.
It's going to take him about a year and a half to get the value out of it compared to just spending the time you would be using it, say, on the AWS equivalent machines. But it's nice to be able to have that. You know, you don't have to sit there and having an option like this. You just need a temporary VM. You can take advantage of these cloud-based GPU-optimized VMs and then not have to sit there and drop a $16,000 on a machine or something. So
yeah, it doesn't mention pricing in here. I guess this is because it's just in preview, but I suspect this NC24 machine with 24 cores, 224 gig of RAM, 1.4 terabyte SSD, and four of these GPUs in it is going to set you back a pretty penny. But that's a lot of computing power.
It is. I mean, it's a hell of a lot. I've been trying to find a spot where we can find the place where these different regions are. Oh, here we go. Hold on. I just found the region. So it's in South Central. So let's see what we're looking at here. So this is for a Windows-based VM, and the N series go from the high-end one, which is the one you just mentioned. It's four Tesla K80 machines, 1.4 terabytes of SSD storage, 224 gigs, and 24 cores is $3 an hour. So that comes out to about $2,200 per month. The low-end version, which is all the way down to 6 cores, 32 gigs of RAM, and one M60 card is 73 cents per hour. So they definitely get pricey. I know it's 73 cents an hour is fairly expensive for what the VMs, for a lot of the VM offerings that they have. But
yeah, and I guess you may not be using it all month, right? So you turn them off.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely just use it for when you're going to consume it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nice.
So another bit of news that we saw come out of the Azure guys is this one's pretty cool here. And I'm looking forward to trying this out. They announced general availability for Azure AD authentication in SQL databases and SQL data warehouse. So that now, starting immediately, you can use Azure AD authentication in a SQL database. What this is going to allow you to do is instead of using something like, say, SQL authentication, special user account for connecting to the database, this is going to give you much better support for using a true AD credential. So it's going to give you greatly simplified permission management, allowing customers to control database permissions via the Azure AD groups without having any access to the underlying databases. That wasn't the case before. Mm. It's going to support Azure AD managed and federated domains with username, password. Password rotation is also centralized and triggered automatically from Azure AD. That's pretty cool, especially for databases. Integrated Windows Auth for Azure AD federated domains and clients on domain joined machines. This enables single sign-on across participating services. And then also using JSON Web Tokens or JOT tokens, which is going to allow you to perform Azure AD authentication for middle-tier applications like service accounts against a SQL database. So that's available today in the latest Azure portal where you can go take advantage of that right now and for SQL Azure databases, Azure SQL databases.
Azure SQL databases, yeah, it's about a mouthful there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, very nice, very nice.
Absolutely.
We have some big news.
Yes.
From Gartner that Microsoft is now a leader across IaaS, infrastructure as a service, PaaS, platform as a service, and SaaS, software as a service, in their magic quadrants. So there's a new report that came out from Gartner, and they talk about how Microsoft's basically catching up, I guess, for want of a better word, in a big summary. But we won't dig into all of the details about every part of this, but it's interesting. We've covered this on the show before about how they were a leader in the PaaS space previously, but not in IaaS. And so now they've moved into the leader quadrant. That doesn't mean they are leading. It just means they are a leader. And they acknowledge in the article that, or in the report, that AWS is in the coveted right upper corner of the magic quadrant. But just behind AWS is Microsoft Azure now, which is pretty exciting for in the IaaS space because they've been playing a bunch of catch up. And of course, this is just a Gartner report, but it's definitely something that IT leaders look to for guidance and advice, and it makes a big difference. And if you're not up there, they're likely to look at leaders first. So this will make a big difference to CIOs and things like that that are looking at cloud computing and deciding who they should at least look at and evaluate. And having Microsoft up there in the top quadrant right by AWS is a big deal.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think, you know, all of us that are fairly close to what Microsoft's doing on the cloud space in Azure, these kinds of reports don't mean a whole lot to people like us in terms of,
yep,
like, it's not going to change my decision on, am I going to use Azure for this or for that or whatever. But there are a lot of companies that are out there, a lot of very big companies that will really only accept or only consider certain vendors that are based on these magic quadrants that are out there. So this is a big deal, but this also is a lot of validation from someone outside, from Gartner, saying that, you know, Microsoft is on the same playing field as folks like AWS. I mean, when we've looked at, I think you and I both share the same perception that in the past, it's always been AWS has always been, they focus on IaaS and then they have a PaaS offering, not much of a SaaS offering, but mostly of a PaaS offering, where we look over at Microsoft and Microsoft has, they really did both at the beginning, but they really focused primarily on PaaS, and PaaS is still a really big piece to them. But they also play very well in the IaaS space with a ton of different VM options. I mean, almost to the point where you have too many options. It's almost like walking into a,
yeah,
what's that restaurant? You walk into a Cheesecake Factory and the menu's about as thick as a spiral notebook, and you can't figure out, it actually is a spiral notebook. What am I going to have? Like, I don't know. There's just so many freaking options here. And the same thing with, you know, what Microsoft has done with their IaaS space. And we just talked about those in-series VMs. I think it's great that they're in this place here. And, you know, you're seeing them compared to someone like the Google Cloud Platform too in this report. And you see that Microsoft is seen as kind of being in the same class as AWS. So it's a,
yep,
good job for Microsoft. Congratulations on being moved up into that area.
Yeah, there was a couple of press reports about this and a couple of interesting observations. One that was, there seems to be a lot of consolidation going on around the two top vendors, so around AWS and around Azure, and a bunch of people have disappeared from last year's reports, like Joyent, Verizon, Dimension Data, things like that. So there seems to be fewer and fewer players and more momentum behind the top two. But they also talk about third-ranked Google, who are down in the visionary category, or quadrant, I should say. So they're still a fair way behind, but only started their journey in IaaS in December 2013. So they've got a bunch of catch up to play. But we've talked about them a little bit on the show before about having an interesting offering. But yeah, some consolidation around AWS and Azure. And so it's really a two-horse race at this stage with a third place that could be the Usain Bolt of the cloud world. We will see if he catches up in the last 50% of the race. But it's possible, I guess.
I tell you, it is. It's really interesting to watch what GCP is doing. I've looked at a lot of their stuff recently, and it's not, or over the last few months, and it's a different offering than what you're used to with AWS and with Azure, but it's a very good and very strong offering. They have some interesting takes on stuff. Like, if you have a VM that you're running with GCP and you leave it on all the time, you're using it all the time, you get like an automatic, over a certain amount of time, I can't remember what it is, but you get an automatic like 30% discount on the bill at the end of it. So once you spend a certain amount, then they cut you another 30% cut by them not having to, say, spin the machine up and spin it down and reallocate and all that kind of stuff. So it's a creative pricing thing there. And I haven't really spent too much time on figuring what makes more sense. Does it make sense to have your stuff in AWS or Azure, or, you know, what are those different scenarios? So it's an interesting offering there. They don't have as many features as Azure and AWS do, but they've got some really good core features that they focused on. So they've decided to go very narrow on their offering, but very, very deep and very specialized. So
gotcha.
Definitely pretty popular. I mean, it's, and now what we're seeing now too, I think what we're seeing a lot of in the cloud stuff is we're starting to see not only a couple products, but a couple services that, where people building applications, they don't build applications that are only going to live in Azure or only going to live in AWS. They're starting to build stuff that actually crosses public clouds. And it's an interesting decision because when each one of them has a specialized offering, it can be kind of challenging on where, you know, where are you going to store it? Like, if I'm putting stuff in a message queue, I'm not going to put it in Azure storage. And then I think it's SNS that AWS has. And so you're like, well, where am I going to put that stuff? And do you have to write two different versions of it? It adds some complication to it. But the benefit there is that if one of them has a massive outage and you're kind of insulated. Then again, should you really care about those one incident a year kind of things there? And should you build for that scenario? It depends on what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
hey, should we do some picks?
Absolutely. I got a pair of picks here. You want to go first or you want me to go or how you want to do it?
Yeah, I'm happy to go first. I don't mind.
I've got
a couple.
Go for it, Mr. Host.
Okay, so the first one is, my first pick is play Minecraft on the Oculus Rift. So there is a new beta, I guess, Now, anybody who owns the Mac or the PC version of Minecraft is granted access to the Windows 10 beta version of Minecraft. Mm. And you can play that on the Oculus Rift as part of the update to that. So I just want to run around in a Minecraft world in virtual reality and hopefully not hit the walls of my house, but I reckon it'd be pretty hilarious. It'd be pretty fun.
It'd be nice to have a camera on the outside of it so we could actually show you where those walls are.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of one of the things with VR, right, is you're kind of immersed and you may end up running into things.
Yeah.
There's some interesting solutions to that, but that's a time for another different conversation. But yeah, Minecraft on Oculus Rift, I think that'd be pretty sweet.
Mm, very cool.
So that's my first one.
That's your first one. Okay, so my first one is going to be around a Node.js thing. So there's an article that I'm going to post a link to here that I found pretty interesting. It's called The Dramatic Effects of Omitting the Node ENV Environment Variable in Your Application, specifically in your Express web server applications, but it applies to a lot of different things. So one of the things with Node or with a lot of different applications is that you can control different settings of how something works using an environment variable. And it's kind of a global setting on your machine or in the process and that the application can have access to. And in Node, we have the Node_ENV that is usually not set by default by a lot of people, but it's usually used for two different things. You either set it equal to either the word production or to the word
development.
Development, yeah. And what this link does is it shows that if you don't include it at all, it shows what a slice in time, what the call stack looks like and what the CPU looks like. And so how Node defaults to having a lot more stuff in the stack and doing a lot more kind of emitting of information and stuff that is not really necessary in a production environment. You really want to use it in a debug environment. Then the guy went through and he turned it on. He put Node ENV equals production. And you can see a significant spike, not only in the amount of requests per seconds that it could handle, but also with the CPU utilization dropping way down, not nearly being as much of a burden. So it's interesting thing to go take a look at. If you're playing around with Node at all, it can be a bit of an eye-opener because that one little thing of just putting Node ENV or Node_ENV equals production space, and then the execution for your application, node space index.js. If you're doing anything with like the Express web server, you can see a significant performance boost by just adding that one little change.
Nice. Very cool. Hey, when your boss calls you and says, like, we need to speed up our web app, and you change one environment variable, that's winning right there.
Exactly. Exactly.
I got another one. It's called the OmniCharge Smart and Compact Portable Power Bank. So this is yet another way to charge your devices, except this one, it's crowdsourced up on or crowdfunded up on Indiegogo. They've raised almost 1.2 million from 8,500 backers. And the interesting thing about this is it's got an AC/DC, not the band, the currency, I guess, or the current power outlet. So you could plug a laptop into this thing.
Wow.
There seems to be two versions, like a less powerful one at 13,600 milliamp hours, and another one at 20,400 milliamp hours. So that's quite a bit of juice. And they promised to be able to plug in a laptop and charge it. I don't know how much of a charge. Like, I don't know. I guess it depends on your laptop, right? How long you get out of that. But being able to plug in your phone or your laptop or all sorts of different devices comes with a couple of USB ports and an AC/DC. Power outlet.
This is pretty cool. I see that they're in the I guess the Indiegogo stage. I was going to call it the Kickstarter stage, but Indiegogo is where they're actually doing their crowdfunding.
Yeah.
The stat says that if you get a tablet, it'll charge it up to 8 times. Action cameras, which looks like a GoPro, up to 8 charges. Laptops, up to 13 hours. And the video actually shows an a MacBook Pro being plugged in. So
nice.
We don't know how many hours that is, but it just says up to. But I think that when you can look at a tablet and say you can charge a tablet or a smartphone with 8 or 9 times off this thing, and it's really looks like about the size of your hand, that's a pretty good option there.
Yeah. They also promised to do it says they're doing a 120 volt and a 220 volt, you know, 110 or 220 or 120 and 240, depending on who you are and where you are. But yeah, so you'll be able to get different plug types for it.
I like the little screen that it's got next to it, that it's got on a little LCD or OLED screen that shows you what the...
Yeah, it'll tell you output, right?
Yeah, output, total capacity that it's got, stuff like that. So that's nice.
Yeah, and also the USB ports do fast charging as well. So they give you decent amperage output.
Yeah.
You know, some ports won't charge like your iPad or whatever because they can't suck enough amps through them. These ones promise to do that. So that's kind of cool. I think for the traveler, this will be pretty sweet.
Oh, wow. Check this out. Not only, so it goes up to 4.8 amps on 2 fast charging USB ports, but it also does wireless charging for an additional $16. So at the top of it does wireless charging if you've got one of those smartphones that does that. And it also has an option for USB Type-C or a barrel plug charge up to either 15 watts for the USB-C or the barrel plug up to 34 watts.
Yeah.
It's a pretty slick little device.
Not bad, huh?
Surprising how big it is, too. I thought it would be a lot bigger to be able to do all this.
And you can get in the charging Indiegogo campaign. They're charging $140 plus shipping for the OmniCharge Pro, which is the 20,000 milliamp hour one.
Did you fund it?
Not yet.
You going to? Or are you thinking about it?
Of course I'm going to. Of course I am. Just because it's super nerdy. I love it.
It's even got a DC port, a 4.5 to 80 volt DC port, 4 amp or 2 amp.
Pretty sweet.
Holy crap. Anyway.
Yeah, pretty nice.
That's nice. Okay. So my last pick is an article by a site that I frequent because I drive an electric vehicle. It's called electric.co. This came out in mid-August. And it talks about the new Tesla Autopilot system that's going to be shipping out. It's going to be included on cars. So we're starting to see in some of the forums, some people that are taking delivery of their Teslas are starting to see some of the new hardware, or this new mounting hardware showing up on the windshields, where if you look at Tesla's windshield today, you see this big black thing that's attached to the windshield behind the rearview mirror. And it's got one kind of a diagonal, one triangle that you see there. That's a radar.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see now that there's going to be 2 of those. So they're adding in additional cameras. It's a total of 3 cameras that'll be forward facing. And it's supposed to get a much higher resolution for doing autonomous driving.
Mm.
Where there's supposed to be a significant update to the autopilot stuff coming with the next update that Tesla ships out. We should be seeing it any day now. It's been in private beta or closed beta for about 4 weeks now. And usually it's about 4 weeks when we start to see it hit the public beta and start showing up. So we don't get any kind of a notice other than just our phone says software update available and you want to plug in, get home as fast as you can, plug in and go push the button and say update it, because you don't want to wait for it to do it automatically overnight.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's supposed to do a lot of big updates to it. It was pretty interesting though, because the guy goes into a lot of technical stuff about what this is going to look like, what the changes and what the improvements do to it. So moving a lot closer towards fully autonomous driving. But yeah, you know, it's interesting because there's been news, you know, a bunch of news out there about autopilot being unsafe and people saying they should be able to disable it. I tell you, it's a firsthand, a lot of the people that have had accidents with it are, they're idiots the way that they're using it. It's not intended to be used the way they're using it. But man, part of it though, it's got and I know that, you know, Mercedes has this feature as well, where it's got that radar controlled cruise control.
Yeah, adaptive cruise control.
Yeah. Well, I was last week or 2 weeks ago, I was driving home from North Carolina to Florida, and I had a couple bad rainstorms with my son on the way home. And we're going down Interstate 95. Was going about 70 miles an hour, had to drop it down to about 45 because I couldn't see anything. And really got to the point where, you know, you get those rainstorms, you literally cannot see anything in front of you.
Yep. Super heavy.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I look at the dash, and on the dash right in front of me, it saw 2 cars that were out in front of me. I knew they were there, but I couldn't see them out the windshield. And so I turned on the cruise control, set it at 45 miles an hour, and it maintained the distance with the cars in front of me. And before you could see that on the radar, could see those cars braking before I could physically see them out the windshield. So it just added a huge safety factor to it.
Oh, yeah. It's the way of the future. They're all going to be that way.
Yeah.
But in a matter of time.
Yeah.
It's going to be cool it'll be a lot safer when everybody's got that stuff, because, you know, you'll be able to do safe speeds and you won't have morons that texting on their phone and don't see you stopping in front of them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anywho. Yeah, very cool. Hey, well, we've covered a bunch of great news on the show. Hope everybody's enjoyed catching up about what's been going on with Ignite and Azure and Office 365 and the new stuff with the report from Gartner. A couple of interesting, cool picks. We've got some Node picks, Tesla picks, Minecraft picks, and battery backup for your life picks. So yeah, we hope you really enjoy the show. We want to do some more news in the future and things, but if you've got any feedback for us, please send us or hit us up on Twitter. It's always great to get listener questions and feedback, so we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and if you're going to be at the Ignite show in Atlanta in late September, definitely reach out to us. CJ and I'd love to link up with you and maybe get you on the show and talk to you a little bit about what you're working on. Don't worry about having to be any kind of prep or anything. We'll make it real simple and just chat for maybe 5-10 minutes or so.
Yeah, we may even have to do some sort of organized listener meetup.
Oh, that's a great idea. We have to think about that one, how we're going to do that.
Sorry to spring that on you, but yeah, I just thought of that just the other day. I was like, we should really meet people there. It'd be awesome.
I like the idea, like a lunch or a drink we'd never do a drink.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
It works for me.
I don't drink. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
No, I'm kidding. All right, AC. Have a good one, mate.
Yeah, man. You do the same. Good talking to you.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.